Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on April 1st, 2015. Chris.
Yes.
Obvious lie. April Fool. Okay, we're done.
Yeah. Out of the way. Thank God. I hate April Fool's Day, Nick.
I know. We've been over this before.
Have we had... I feel like we've had April Fool's Day, like a podcast on April Fool's Day before, and I went into the spiel, but...
Yeah, you bitched about it for a bit, but I mean, like, I'm there with you.
Okay,
you know? Thank God. Those things where it's like, you know, I feel good about violating my trust with people for just one day, and if, you know, you're not fine with it, then you're a party pooper. It's like, no, it's annoying, it's not funny.
It's not funny, it's just, I hate it. Like, if you've watched what Riot's been doing, that's been funny. Like, that's just been
goofy. Oh, yeah, the Nerf thing? That's fucking...
Like, that's just stupidly silly. Like, obvious that they're joking, but it's wacky. Like, it's like, oh, this is silly. Like, we're not going to make a joke that you obviously know isn't true, and then that's, like, what we're doing. Like, we're going to do something wacky. We had, like, a bunch of fucking... All of our casters dress up in suits and talking, like, 1920s accents or, like, fucking Victorian accents while they commentate over a fucking ridiculous Earth game.
Oh, yes.
But, like, fucking WoW, like, put up a post, like, WoW to end in 2016. You're just like, come on. No one finds that funny. You're fucking assholes. I hope your company does end, but then
yeah,
they
there are certain ways to go about it. You know, it's like, if you do something that does not, like, interfere with your daily, or not daily, but, you know, what people expect you to be doing for them, then that's fine. And that is what Riot League of Legends did, was it's like, oh, here's this new game mode and stuff that you don't have to even, you know, acknowledge, but it's kind of funny if you do.
Yeah.
Like it's not just, like they went in and said, for one day only, we're just going to fuck over everyone's games or something like
that. Or they're just like, oh, for one day only, every champion's Teemo. You're just like, oh, so you've inconvenienced my day.
So, yeah, I mean, but that's the thing, is that I'm sure we sound like very salty and sour individuals when we're talking like this. But
the kids listening are just like, Mommy, these old guys are fucking complaining on the internet about April Fools. And she's like, son, we live here in the United Arab Emirates, and you should stop listening to those boys.
They're like, what is it, April Fool's Day?
We don't follow their calendar. We don't have their Hallmark holidays. I assume. I don't know. They might celebrate it there.
Mm. Maybe April Fool's Day is, like, awesome in other countries.
Huh. I'd be baffled by that. Not, like, baffled that it is, just, like, disappointed. Like, if I found out, like, oh, man, Sweden loves April Fool's Day, I would lose a little respect for Sweden. I'd be like, come on, guys. You used to have Vikings and a chef. Now you're just known as the April Fool's Day country.
They still have the chef. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but now this has replaced what I know in my mind. So, you know, I'm going to be a bit more bitter. I don't know. Okay. I feel like I'm cursed. I feel like I haven't made good selections for our recommendations recently, Nick.
Well, if it makes you feel better, I mean, I had Terraform Mars last time, and you ate that, so, you know.
Yeah, but this is different. Plus, I already had to eat my own share of shit from people for disliking Terraform Mars, so, I mean, it's all in its own way, but no.
This wasn't M0, and people were like, what's wrong with it?
Like an infamous plant fucking knocking on my door at fucking 2 in the morning, like, oh, you don't get it.
How dare you?
You don't get it.
Sir, you have disrespected my favorite series.
The Naked Mandrake Girl's hilarious.
Let's talk about Appleseed, though.
Yes.
This is a very short series. It's only 25 chapters long. Chapters are varying length. It comes out to, what, 4 volumes? 5
yeah,
volumes?
I think it was 4 volumes.
All right. Okay, so let's talk about what we know about this series. Okay, so, anyway.
There's a robot, a cyborg.
Right. God, the names in this series are so weird.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
One of them is, one of the characters is named Hitomi, but the main characters are Dunen Newt and Briarios Hecatonchires.
I just call them Robot Dude.
They're Bob and Sarah now, okay?
Robot Dude and Eye Patch Girl.
Right. And she doesn't get the eye patch until, like, a good portion into it, but whatever. Okay, so This is a cyberpunk series, and apparently it's set after the non-nuclear Third World War, which decimated the Earth, and there are some states that maintain order and power, and there are international organizations that have taken charge during it, and apparently they were... The main characters used to be SWAT members, and reading through the series normally, I didn't get any of this information. I got that they were former cops, but it's like you're just dropped into this situation where it's like, okay, I guess it's a cyberpunk future, and they're trying to survive something. They're fighting some organization, and they're staying somewhere. And they're being targeted by some people, and
sometimes they talk to people.
And Dunin has to get a job for some reason, and she got reassigned for some reason. It's so weird. It is the strangest storytelling that I've ever seen. You know that rule, which is, you know, show, don't tell? Tell me something.
They're like, no, we're showing you a lot, so you should be pretty pleased with
us. Show me stuff that's relevant so that I can understand who these people are, why I should care about them, and why they're doing what they're doing, and why people who don't like them don't like them. That's all I need to know, and I don't know any of that.
All right, here's the thing. I had not heard of this series going into it. I have not heard of Appleseed before, but judging off the reaction I got from several people when we mentioned it, including Steve Mann and Sonic Gad, mentioned, like, oh, I love the fucking AAV sport. Yeah,
cyberpunk stuff, so.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is a series that has warmed itself to a lot of people, and I imagine it's probably because it's in a different format. I feel like this is probably a very good series in an OVA or a movie, whatever format it was, in animation. I feel like you might be able to kind of explain things a little bit better. I think the manga just doesn't do a very good job to translate that. The thing that this series has going for it that works is, I mean, this is very classic sci-fi. You know, a lot of themes of humanity, of uniformism, of, you know, sociological impacts of just robotics or cloning or things like that. They're discussed. I just can't fucking understand half of it because it's really dense and there's not a lot of time to breathe, and it's every so often just awkwardly interrupted up with, like, weird chibi anime humor that I didn't quite get. So there's points where I'm like, oh man, this is actually kind of profound. I can get behind this. And then I flip to the next page and I'm like, I don't know what's happening anymore. I'm lost.
It's definitely just something. I think that the reason it's popular is probably the ideas it contains rather than the way that it actually executes them. Because, you know, it's like, okay, you know, strip it down to the bare bones, and what do you have? You've got a robot and his partner, and sometimes they seem to be romantically involved, I think.
No, Nick, they're not romantically involved. She just teases him from time to time.
Okay. I don't know. There's so much that goes unstated and is not carried across well that I assumed stuff, I guess.
I'm more confused. I'm like, do they hate that one girl, the black-haired girl who also writes a
manga? And if not, why don't they?
I feel like you guys hate her, then you were cool with it, and I was like right back to being like, ah, fuck it, bitch.
And why is that girl with glasses her friend if then she's her enemy, and how does she not know, and how did she not see her leaving the apartment if she was staying over while she was launching an attack? And, oh god, it's so confusing. And I it's just weird storytelling. It's just, I want to draw this stuff happening. And really, in a lot of ways, it is basically drawn and laid out the way that a movie or a TV series would be. There's a lot of various, like, silent moments where stuff is basically made to appear very cinematic. But then, yeah, you do hit those pages and pages of text. And a lot of it is just, like, characters waxing philosophical. And then all of a sudden, actually, I think my favorite joke in the whole series was, like, basically, some group tries to assassinate Briareos for some reason, but they don't succeed for some reason, and then he has to be taken to the hospital, and so while he's staying in the hospital, like, this doctor it like talks to the two of them, Briareos and Dunin, and says like, "Oh, what does it really mean to be human? And what is it? And you know, is perhaps humans are actually automatons created by a prior race, and we were abandoned, and so we had to make our own way." And you can read all about it in my new book that's coming out. Won't you buy a copy?
Yeah, it's just kind of like humans, the aliens of our world, or something like that. You're just like, huh? Good sell, dude.
Yeah. It's like, okay, that was kind of funny, but there's just a whole bunch of stuff like that, and you know, all that stuff is like, okay, I can see how that would be good. I just don't care about what the actual setting and story and plot supposedly is, because I don't know. I'm not really being given reason to care about it. Mm. It's a bunch of interesting ideas, but there's not really an interesting story to tie it all together.
And the thing I just want to make clear, I haven't had a chance to watch the movies or the OVAs or anything like that.
This is just like, the manga we're talking.
Yeah, we're just talking about the manga. I feel like this would be a good story in those formats because there's interesting aspects to this. This idea of like a police kind of buddy cop action series placed beneath heavy political intrigue. I mean, that's not exactly, but to a certain extent, that's what I understand Ghost in the Shell is. And there was. Yeah. There's even certain aspects of the series that I see strongly similar to themes in Mass Effect, that I enjoyed.
Like Dunin is a
Shepherd.
The Major. Yeah. Like Dunin is the Major and Briareos is like Bato or something like that.
Yeah, like there's stuff here that I'm just like, I can see how somebody would really enjoy this. It's just for some reason, the format it's presented in, the manga is just really hard to read. Even the action scenes, which kind of tend to go on for a really long time, it's just kind of just difficult to follow them from page to page or even just panel to panel. Like, I don't know. It was very easy for my brain to get lost. I'm ADD, but
it might be also that it's dated because this came out like originally in 1985 and manga's evolved a lot in, you know, the last 30 years or so. Maybe we're just used to seeing things done a certain way. We've read very old manga for this podcast before and we've enjoyed some of them. But each time we go back beyond a certain point, difference definitely does show. And it is something that we always have to take note of because it is a very different experience reading it. But yeah, I mean, I think that maybe it would be better if we had watched it than if we had read it. I mean, we had a pretty heated disagreement when we did Madoka because I was like, what are you talking about? This is great. And you're like, no, I can't get into it. And then I realized it was because I just wasn't paying as much attention to how it carried across in the manga because having watched the anime so recently, that was all I was thinking of. Certain things just carry across better in some media than others. Some adaptations are better than the original manga. So there you go.
Yeah. So it's weird to be like, all right, well, that's that. Time for recommendations when it's like 5 minutes into the episode. But I don't really know what else there is to say. I can't even really think of, like, specific moments to pick out.
Yeah, it's all really just a blur in my head. And I know that some people were talking about this, like, oh, you know, I think that Dunin is a really great character, and I like the way that she's portrayed. I think she's a great example of a female manga character. And it's like, well, she's fine. Briareos is fine, I guess. And I don't really have a problem with any one element of this series. She didn't find it interesting. Something was just kind of missing from it, that's all.
Well, I like Briareos because he's a robot, and I like robots because I'm 12.
I like his ears, his rabbit ear things.
He's got glowy eyes.
No, that's his nose.
Oh, okay, sorry. It's ridiculous. No, I think the only way I can really recommend this, if you are a big fan of science fiction, I think this is going to be up your alley, but again, I feel like if you're into the, you know, the series interests you, if sci-fi interests you, I feel like, and again, I can't say for certain, maybe the movies are just as confusing, but I feel like those are probably going to be the better avenue to go with. I think the manga maybe appealed to some people, and then once it got put into a more appropriate format, that's when maybe it gained its cult following. I don't know.
So yeah, anyway, moving on.
I feel awful, because I feel like, oh man, what a...
I do just like whenever we have, you know, a recommended series and we talk about it for a very short length of time. I do like to have very meaty discussions about the recommendations we take, but we just got nothing to go on this time. Because we've got the same opinion. So,
like, Nick, remember that one time they were in that room and that one lady was just like, bah. She complained about things a lot. She had that really wacky 80s hair.
Yes.
All right, Nick, let's jump into Bleach. Something All to right. cheer you up.
Recap, Orphan Weekly Manga recap.
Wait, first, though, we have to make special note. Next week, Black Clover will be joining the recap again. It's been picked up by English Jump, so we'll be discussing it again.
We're probably going to have two chapters to go on then.
Yeah, they're gonna be doing a little bit of a catch-up to get it up to speed. And some people have said, oh, this means that you know, you're going to get an extra series. And I'm like, well, probably not going to have Gakkyo Hotei too much longer. It's unfortunately been doing not well at all in the rankings. It's been bottom five consistently for several weeks now. So unless
Which is why the chapter this week we will be discussing for a full hour.
Yeah, we're getting everything out of it. I've got the fucking Dual Destiny soundtrack loaded up. We're just going through the whole thing.
Okay. But in the meantime, Bleach 621, The Dark Curtain. So last time, Juhabag basically decided, oh, well, this arm is here, getting in my way, so I'm just going to absorb it because I can. And then he did. Meanwhile, back down in Soul Society, Ukitake's body kind of collapses because the arm is being sucked out of his mouth and is no longer connected to him. And his third seers are just like, Captain! Yep.
Well,
he's dead. He's dead, guys.
I mean, he served his one purpose.
He is way deader than Unohana, I gotta say. Unohana might come back. He ain't.
Will that become the other second running joke of like
Unohana's dead and never coming back? But seriously though, Ukitake is so dead.
Ukitake is super dead.
So everyone freaks out because they realize Rayo's right arm is disappearing. Then giant black wall descends and completely closes off the entirety of the Sirete. Back up in the Soul King's palace, ex-Axis guy whose name I keep forgetting is Furry cowboy hat guy is like, oh, your majesty, why have you stumbled? Because Juhabak is kind of keeled over and leaning against Rayo's thing, his amber thing. Yeah. And then he looks down and he's like, oh my god, he's surrounded by the unknown! Well, you know, black eye crawly thingies. They resemble something else, too. I can't remember what it is. They're the shadows or something like that from Kingdom Hearts or Heartless. Heartless or whatever.
To a certain extent, yeah. Little black globbits.
I know that those tended to have two eyes, but whatever. So he's like, oh my god, what is this? And Jugo Hochwald is like, it's okay. I perfectly understand the situation for some reason.
I'm just good like that.
Yeah. He says, this is a torrent of Rayo's power. Rayo's power, which was released from the Soul Reaper's seal, has become an unstoppable torrent and is passing through His Majesty's body. It will not harm you, because Rayo's enemy is the Soul Reapers. And then they just get eaten too, because he was wrong. Yeah.
That's the ending you wanted for this chapter?
No, if not.
They're just bio-meats, it turns out, and they're just devouring him.
Quick, nobody make a move.
Those
bugs! Oh my god, what are these things? They're so weird! Ah, save me!
Oh my god, I just watched them get eaten. But these little cute things couldn't possibly harm us! Ah!
Oh god, save me! So everyone looks up and realizes the sky's been blacked out, and Hisage says, oh man, it's so dark! What happened? And Soifun's like, what else could it be? It's the Quincy's doing. Okay.
Fair enough.
Is Hisage just that stupid? The black arm shot up into the sky, and then the sky turned black. What happened? Oh, God.
The day cycle must have turned from day to night. Yeah. Or maybe someone played the Song of Time, and they turned it to night.
It's the Song of the Sun, I'll have you know. No one wanted to be attacked by Redead, because those things are freaky. Anyway. So Soifun realizes, oh wait, there's a hole in the Shakun... the barrier that surrounds Soul Society.
The domey thingy barrier.
The domey thing. So she decides, wait, that's now a prime target for the enemy. And she dashes up into the sky and she's like, we have to destroy the canopy. And she summons her Bankai and tries to shoot it. But then the black eye things immediately surround her. And she's like, what the hell is this?
They all go chi-chi-chi-chi-chi too.
Yes. So
the sound of pure evil.
So Omaeda swings his mace and knocks some, like, right off of her head, which, I mean, well done on you. I have no idea how the fuck you managed that.
That is very, very precise fucking angling when you're swinging a mace.
So Omaeda is like, are you alright, Captain? And Soifon just bashes him in the face, and he's like, oh, come on! I'm like, yeah, I kind of feel for you, man. So a couple of guys also join them. They summon their Shikai, and then they still get surrounded, so Byakuya uses his Senbanzakura to try and fend them off. Everyone's like, oh my god, there's no end to them! They're going to destroy the canopy! And then suddenly all of the black eye thingies get completely crushed under an invisible force, and a voice says, how comical! What are you doing swatting them away one by one with your swords? When you could crush them in one breath with your spiritual pressure. And Isaac shows up on his throne theme.
Alright, there's something very amusing about this. Like, he shows up, he's just like, what are you doing? You could crush them all with your spiritual pressure. And when he's saying that, you can see that, like, one of them is crushed beneath his chair. And I like to just think that he's just, like, stomping around his fucking chair, crushing them. Like, he's just like, what are you doing? Dum, 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 dum.
You could just use your spiritual pressure.
But, or your giant chair.
This is part of my spiritual pressure. Shut up.
You could just use your enormous prison recliner to crush them. Smush, 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 smush.
You're the only one who has that, though.
You sure you should get one?
I do like how big of a dick he's being like this, though. Like, come on, guys. How did you not think of this? You're all so stupid, and I'm so smart because I am Isaac.
That's what Isaac needs to be at this point in the story, though. He needs to be as over-the-top and as insulting, fucking douchey. Oh, you guys didn't know the thing that you couldn't possibly know? Well, that's weird because I know it because I'm Isaac.
Oh, boy.
That's what's going to make him even more enjoyable, Nick.
It's...
Next week there's going to be more Aizen. You know there is.
Oh, I'm sure. But in the meantime, this was a chapter that happened.
This was. I forget that things actually happened. And then I'm like, oh yeah, I guess Aizen kind of just showed up. That was really sort of it. I mean, like,
yeah, basically. Well,
fucking eyeballs came out, but didn't even kill anybody. Fucking Ugutake is already dead. All the rest of them are just like, we're going to bother you.
Kubo is just like, I've run out of ideas for what the Quincy's do, so I spilled a bunch of ink on this page. The ink is the enemy for a couple of chapters.
Yeah, I'll draw a couple eyeballs in it, and done. I have all this leftover ink that I haven't used.
Alright, so you have not read Fairy Tail.
Fairy Tail is going to be a live reading for me this week, because I haven't gotten a chance to get into it up till now, so... We'll see what happens here. Fairy Tale, chapter 426, Blackheart. And the cover of it is the one Indian dude of Fairy Tale, whose name I can't remember.
He's part of Fairy Tale?
Yeah, he's a member of Fairy Tale.
My god.
I feel like he has size changing ability, but I might be thinking about the super fast character. He has some stupid power and never got used. He's like a background character they occasionally just... used for a gag or something like that. But he's there, and the only thing to really note about the cover is there's a really creepy-looking fucking monkey to his right that really has devious plans. Like, I feel like that monkey's being an avatar.
A terrifying smirk, honestly. Once you point out to me, I was like, oh my god, you're completely right.
Like, what is that? Is that monkey gonna kill that man? Alright, so we open up, and Natsu is talking with Happy, this black magic cult avatar that Rogue... intended to... I don't know why I stopped at Rogue. I was like, who's Rogue? And I was like, oh, right. I forgot there's two more Dragon Slayers. Intended to confront... What is it? Avatars gain influence, blah, blah, blah. Xerath! I don't know if he's in any way connected with them or not. From what I could tell, they worship him as a god. So there's Xerath's minions. That gets me fired up. Oh, Natsu. You're so easily amused. Oh, hey, he actually does tell them things.
Yes, he
finally.
Does.
Finally, yes. They're like, hey, what's going on? And Nancy's like, all right, I'll tell you. Remember that rogue who came from the future? I heard it from him. He said that in a year from now, the Grand Magic Games, in other words, right about now, he will confront Gray as an enemy. And that's why I was thinking we could find Gray by taking this job. But our future is different from future rogues, right? Would the same things even happen? Now that you completely mention it, I ain't sure, but we don't have any other clues, so, I mean, this is kind of all I really have to go with.
I just want to point out the hero's recent obsession with Lucy's legs and feet continues in this chapter, because if you notice, basically, like, Natsu hypothesizes that Gray has, like, is basically taking on Devil Slayer magic too fast, and so he might become a devil himself. And so Lucy basically is like, why didn't you tell me this until now? And instead of, like, you know, because this is just her private thought, instead of closing up on her face or her head, close in on her feet. This is what her feet are thinking about the situation, Chris.
That is weird. It almost reminds me of how, like, in Black Lagoon, like, Revy's butt had to just get into every shot no matter what was happening. That is a weird, I don't know if it's a fetish, just a weird pattern to be having at this point.
I think
point.
It's just, I honestly think it's just, like, Hero never limits himself to one fetish.
Like, he's just,
like, cycles through them.
Like, he's just like, oh, man, I haven't done fucking, like, girls being forced to strip in a while, so maybe I'm losing add-ons. Maybe what I need to do is get the foot fetish audience in, and that'll help continue to make me uber popular.
Joss Whedon buys 20 copies.
Yeah. Is he known for being a foot fetish?
He's known for there being weird shots of women's feet in a lot of his work. Like, in Firefly, River goes around barefoot all the time. And people have commented on that one scene in Avengers where, Natasha's introduced and she beats up the guy. And then she has to go and get her shoes. So, there's a close-up of her, like, stockinged feet as she's walking across the floor to get her heels, basically.
Hmm.
Yeah. So he does a bunch of stuff like that, basically.
Interesting. Didn't know that. Anyway, Natsu notes, he's like, I saw that when we fought Marred Gear, all the black tattoos or black markings that appeared all over Gray. He learned Demon Slayer magic way too quick, so I think he may have picked up something evil in the process. And that's Lucy's sweet reply. Why did he hide it all this time?
Tarantino. That's right. Tarantino does it too.
He knew that Gray and Rogue would fight and what the results would be. But that means... And Natsu says, don't you worry. No matter what happens, Gray is our friend. And they're all like, yeah. And I'm like, good. I'm glad Fairy Tail could just dissolve any tension right away.
It's a good thing that they remember that they're friends.
It's a good thing they note that, because I'd forgotten that everyone in Fairy Tail is friends. I'd almost thought...
Well, it hadn't been mentioned in this chapter up to that point.
That is true. It had been a whole 7 pages without friendship being mentioned, so I kind of started to get worried that maybe they'd grown apart. We cut away to Avatar, the guild house of Avatar, as Mr. Steel Mustache Mask Man. I don't care what his name is. He's always going to be known as the guy who has a fucking mask with a mustache on it. Oh, he's just like, the day of purification is near, sir. If I offer up all souls to you, and you will stand atop the great magical world, this impure world will be destroyed and reborn. And then Fabio comes up and he's like, high priest, do you still intend to carry out the Operation Purify as planned? There's a chance that the council's aware of our plans. Oh, his name's Jerome. Hmm. Doesn't feel like a fitting name for him. I'm going to call you... Fuck it, Fabio. That works. And then, wow, you don't have a top at all.
Yeah, I was just...
Briar's like, that's such. We're all suggesting that we should have...
They've got the same name! They've got the same voice, Eddie. They said the same voice twice!
They're siblings. Nowhere else in the series will it be ever noted that this is such, but they are siblings.
They've got a really weird back and forth, these two characters, by the way.
With no skin tone similarities, hair similarities, or anything. Fine, and she's, I don't know, she's, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Oh, and as such, we're suggesting we shouldn't move any uncertain elements from our midst. Tiny text that I can't read, something skeezy.
She reminds me of Storm from X-Men.
She does. She has that haircut. I don't know if Storm ever wore a bandana like that, but...
I like how you just had to think about what article was supposed to be.
Mike, it can't be a top. Usually has more to a top.
Is it a...
Did she, like, accidentally, like, put her shoelaces on top of her breasts instead? And, we look down and she's wearing bras on her feet? And the other guy's like, Scruffy! And the mask guy's like, he says, Scruffy again! Does he say that again?
That's his thing! He's Scruffy!
Well, right, then he's like, I'm proud you will leave! Then they leave, I guess. And then there's a super cute girl named Mary. And she's like,
you will see her panties before this arc is done. I fucking guarantee it.
And she's like, oh, that old guy has a stubborn streak, doesn't he? I wonder if Seraph will come for us really quickly. She's Mickey Mouse, if you didn't tell.
She does have like a, she does kind of have like, she has sort of a bit, mini hair bow type of thing. Yeah. So I'm good with that, yeah.
I forget what the other person's voice. Oh, she's on, so it's like, oh, quiet, venomous woman. And she's just like, you're the bitch. Shitty names.
You're a bitch.
Fucking on the rank. This is ridiculous. And then Goman's there. I don't care. He looks boring. I'm not even going to do his voice. Ooh, a D6. And he's like, on whose side will fate fall? And that's all we get from him. But his mask also has a mustache. Oh, this is the best guild ever. Oh, God, yeah, what's that?
It's a way more stylish mustache, too.
It is. It's almost, you can't even tell it's a mustache at first until you stop and be like, no, that's a mustache right there. Oh, and then there's Abel, which I don't know what the fuck that is. It's terrifying, though. It's like the Teemo of this series. I just don't care as long as it's fun. I don't like Abel, Nick. Does Abel die this chapter?
No.
Damn it. So the guild's talking their problems over. The real problem is the council itself, but how the operation was leaked to them. And Gray says, one of us is a council informant, and you suspect it's me. And everyone's like, Ice. I guess because that's her nickname.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
And she's like, oh, well, you are on the best continent on the guild. And I think Fabio's like, I've done some research on you, Gray Fullbuster. You've got a past. Your parents were killed by one of
You've got a past!
He's right. He does have a past.
You have been on this planet before this single instant.
You have a backstory, Gray. Your parents were killed by one of Zeref's demons, and that isn't all. Your own teacher and her daughter died in Zeref-related incidents. Everyone's like, actually, Ultir didn't die. She was just aged up tremendously, but she still got to have a happy ending because no one has a happy ending.
He's like, shut up, I didn't read the spoilers on the Wikia.
He's like, shut up, I stopped reading Fairy Tail after the Fighting Festival arc, and I just picked it back up. I don't care.
No spoilers.
Like, everything's a spoiler in this series. Friendship wins. Just,
but you know that Gray has Devil Slayer powers.
Maybe not. Just wait to find out. Maybe next week something different happens. He's like, he has absolutely no reason to worship Zeref. And Gray's like, you've done enough research, Dark Sword Jerome-san. Ultir, Ur's daughter, is not dead. He's like, I just told you spoilers! I didn't know that yet! Fuck, you're an asshole. He's like, I still don't see a reason for you to be here. And Boyer's like, stop it, Scruffy. Gray's like, no, don't shut up. I'll make this very clear. My goal is the Book of End. That's why I'm here. If I can get it, if I can get my hands on that book, I don't care what else happens. I've long ago forgotten about any guilt. I just want the book. No! I live only to defeat End, and I don't care who or what I have to use to make that happen. And Brer's like, ah, oh, his lust for revenge is blocking his soul and his body. His body! And, God, Gray talks a lot, doesn't he? Until that day, I'll work alongside you people. Clack, 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 clack. And that's him walking away. He has high heels on, so it echoes against the floor really loudly. little girl, whose name I don't remember, she's like, there's no way somebody with magic that black is going to inform the council on us.
That's racist.
And Scruffy's like, Brer, I've been thinking. Scruffy suits me. And that was hilarious. Whew, glad they got that joke in. Then we come back to Natsu and them, who are approaching the guild, and they're like, you can see it from over there. Happy asks, what's our plan? And Natsu, of course, is like, what else? Frontal attack! And then we cut away to, I don't know who these people are, and they're marching.
You will.
Oh, okay. And they're marching, they're like, we'll soon be arriving in Mikage Force, where Avatar's base is! And a voice is like, right! And the person's like, and I hate to mention it, but this cult our informant tells us that Gray Fullbuster is a member of it. Gray? Who cares? Oh, it's the...
It's congealed.
It's congealed. I made him Edwin.
Well, like I give up, but this goes immediately.
He's like, who cares? I mean, we're going to grab them all and murder them. Shit.
Oh. I had to hold it until you realized it on your own.
I was like, oh, never mind, it's the one character who should never be Edwin. He's like, who cares, we're gonna grab all of them. That's the job of the council's arrest and custody division, right? And apparently, Gajeel has taken on a new role as part of the Magic Council's, what I guess is their enforcement arresting unit. Which actually is rather appropriate for him, I think.
And Panther Lily is there, too, in his own awesome uniform.
Yeah, he's fucking Panther Lily, so he's not gonna do anything.
He is going to stand there and look cool, basically.
These fucking cats never do a goddamn thing. So, yeah, it's not a bad chapter, I guess. I guess I'm kind of just like, oh, what a cool ending with Gajeel and everything else. I was like, who cares?
It's definitely seeming like this is going to be a much bigger deal than the whole stuff with Wendy. So, yeah. All right. Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 112, Signposts for Growth. Last time, of course, Soma was working at Shinomiya's new cafe, and he was struggling to keep up, and when, basically, he fell behind, he didn't, like, object to being told to get out of the way and stuff. He was just like, okay, I've just gotta catch up. And, start off where he ended off last time, vowing that by his last day on the job, he would catch up with everyone. And, let's see here. He's basically allowed to sleep on a couch in the staff room, and, it's like, alright, so, you know, the staff will arrive around noon tomorrow, so make sure you're ready and presentable, use the showers, and he's like, okay, thanks. And, what's his name? Abel. It is Abel. Okay. I got confused because there was also Fairy Tale Abel. Yeah. Anyway, so Abel's like, by the way, don't oversleep, Yukihira. He's like, I still don't like you.
Sneer, sneer. I'm a jerk.
Shinomiya also, as he's getting ready to leave, says to Soma, you know, from what I saw of your work today, I am starting to wish that you weren't here. And he says, like, you know, my success here hinges on how well the pre-op. Wow. Okay, fine. Oh, well, it wasn't anybody. Alright, fine. Fuck you, anonymous caller.
It was an April Fool's
fucking
Day
ruining
joke.
My fucking podcast. Jeez. Alright.
T-Mobile April Fool's Day pranking you.
God. Fuck.
They're like, you thought somebody wanted to talk to you. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah, I didn't have the nerve to follow through on the prank call. So, Shinomiya says, like, look, my success depends on how well the pre-opening goes. But you're still acting like this is some kind of fun school project. There are no fun school projects. Don't lie to me. Although I like how he says, like, go on, try to deny it. But then he just keeps on going. Like, well, do you want him to try to deny it? Or do you just, I know that you're being rhetorical, but whatever.
Go on, try to deny it. Like, as he's going down the hallway, like, I would, but you left. He's, like, texting him, I'm going to do it.
So Shinomiya warns him, like, it's going to be even harder from here on out, and you're not even going to be here if you keep going like you have been. So Soma, while he's, you know, resting in the darkness, is, you know, thinking about Abel, you know, scolding him, telling him how he was doing terribly. Meanwhile, out on the street, as everyone's going home, they're like, you know, Chef Shinomiya, you were you're being kind of hard on him. You know, couldn't you have, you know, given him a little bit of advice or something? And he says, hell no, I'm not going to hold his hand. Besides. And everyone's like, what were you talking about? Never mind.
Yeah, I don't want to bring it up.
So, meanwhile, Soma, back in the kitchen, has a whole bunch of notes and books laid out in front of them, and he's going over different cuts, the different fish cuts, and he's like, okay, well, I've got to figure all this stuff out. The next morning arrives, and so everyone shows up. Soma is sitting in the kitchen, already in uniform, and he's like, oh, good morning. And they're like, oh, wow, you're really early. Yes, I've got some questions about the cuts that I missed yesterday, so... do you have a minute? And he was like, no! You're supposed to be cleaning up our utensils! Well, I had to do something because we're going to have Black Clover next week, so, you know.
We want to keep everybody up to speed with the joke that everyone in Black Clover is an asshole.
Right, right. So, you know, he basically says, like, you know, we don't have time for this. We don't have time to waste on you being behind. You messed us up so badly, so you can't, don't ask us for anything. You're supposed to get. We are supposed to have all this stuff ready. And Abel looks around and he realizes that the kitchen is all completely ready. All the ingredients that they have to have are you know are cleaned and peeled. And he's like, "Oh fuck, everything's done." So someone's just sitting there, and so like, okay, Lucy, answer his question.
Yeah, he still doesn't even fucking answer him himself. He's still like, "All right, such other a person, douchebag. You answer it."
So he's like, "God, he must have hardly slept last night to get all this stuff done." The day starts up, and you know, Abel is still like, "All right, you did that wrong. Do it again. Do it really quickly, or we're gonna fall behind." And someone's like, "Okay, I got this. I'll get on it." And you know, Lucy's saying, "You know, we're gonna be behind if you don't get the next ingredient." It's like, "Okay, I'll do this." And then we just kind of like basically get a montage through time, and Abel's like, "You're still asking for advice, really? Yeah, sorry. This is 3 days in a row. Yeah. But I've only got about 50 things I want to ask today." It, like, turns him to stone. So Abel is just thinking to himself, "I've been laying into this kid every single day. He has to be painfully aware of just how inferior his skills are by now. So how come he's still this upbeat? Hasn't this depressed him in the least? Be sad!"
"Why isn't my taunting and bullying tearing you down?"
So,
"How dare you find cooking fun?"
Eventually, Lucy, like, we get to a point where Lucy is, like, about to ask him for something. He's like, "No, I got this right. It's you know, next is their fish course, so I've done all the base prep and stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, okay, yeah, thanks." And he keeps on going through. He keeps on getting everything completely on pace, and Abel's like, "Oh, he's absorbed everything at an unbelievable pace!" And this is my favorite moment in the chapter, where Soma just thinks to himself, "I don't even have 1 second to waste on getting depressed. There's too much else to do, and besides, I'm having way too much fun learning all these new techniques." Freaking love Soma. He's so cool.
I like this, too, because, you know, we read Bambina, and we know before this, you know, has a lot of similarities to how Bambina worked of, you know, this rookie getting his ass handed to him in the kitchen. But the thing that really transitioned or changes between this is Soma, when he has this stuff happen to him, he's like, "Oh, hey, I'm going to go back into this because this is really fucking fun." Like, I think it was Infamous Planet who noted, he's like, "Man, I would never want to work in a kitchen because, like, the way Bambina makes it look, it sounds just fucking miserable." Like, it's almost like, you know, like, yeah, it's hard work, everyone shits on you, you never really appreciate it, the demands are too high, but you do it because it's kind of like the only thing you can do, like, it's like the only thing you're really trained to. But at least, like, in Soma, he's like, "Oh, I love learning all these fucking different cuts and getting to practice them and doing all this stuff." Like, it's just refreshing for him to be like, "Yeah, it's a lot of hard work, and I love it because it's super fun." It's like, oh, okay, this makes me want to work in a kitchen, Nick. I know he'd get in there and they'd just be like, "You need to wash your hands. You need to wash
ingredients.
You stop eating raw meat, you monster." And I'm just like, "Whoa."
Oh, man.
"I lit it over a match for 30 seconds. It's good."
Then things continue progressing from there. And it gets to a point where they're like, "Oh, table four is eating at a fast clip. Is there soup ready?" And Abel's like, "Oh, man, we haven't even started the base prep." And Chinomiya says, "Abel, can you handle it?" "No, I'm sorry, chef. I can't drop what I'm doing." And Lucy says, "My hands are full, too." But then, nearly two-page spread, Soma just comes in, puts a tray down, and says, "The base prep is done." He's already... he's basically ahead of people now at this point. So, all of the sous chefs, well, not sous chefs, but, you know, people besides Shinomiya, they reacted shock, and Shinomiya just says, well, you memorized the recipe by now, right? So finish it yourself. So Soma grins, gets really excited, and gets to work on his own. He has finally been upgraded from, you know, gopher, basically. So he gets to finish one of the dishes himself. The day ends basically successfully. Soma, you know, is tired out, but he's like, all right, yeah. And Shinomiya says, this is not the time to relax. Now is when the real challenge starts. No mistakes tomorrow, not in your last day. Are we clear? And Soma says, perfectly, sir. Then, you know, Lucy kind of congratulates Soma, and Shinomiya says to Abel, I'm saying he stays for the last day, so do you have any objections? And Abel's just like, I guess he passes. Barely.
Oh my god damn, fuck such you, dude.
Dick.
I don't often wish bad things happen to manga characters because you're fictional and, like, I really can't have any control over that, but I hope you get hit with a car over your testicles. You're an asshole.
The only thing that I can imagine is that when they have the menu contest at the end, that Soma is going to fucking steamroll this guy. That is, like, the only way I see this going, because he's being such a prick.
Next week's going to be very interesting, because they noted, you know, next week's his last day. Yeah. And I imagine something huge is going to happen, and not just because it's the last day, but, fuck, what's the owner, the owner's
Shinomiya.
Name? Shinomiya. Noted, he's like, if you keep up with me, you will find your specialty.
Yeah, so there's presumably that, like, in the coming weeks, there's going to actually be a breakthrough for Soma.
Yeah, I'm very excited to see what we get next week, because presumably that's where the dish will be, so I want to really see what we get as his big breakthrough. It's a really good chapter this week, and it's a shame. I actually didn't get to put it in my top... did I? I think I may actually have gotten... No, I didn't get to put it in my top four, because this was a really strong week of Jump otherwise, but this was a really good series, a really good chapter this week.
And the chapter ends on this nice exchange, which explains what Shinomiya didn't say to people earlier about, you know, not helping Soma out. Basically, he's asked, you know, nobody gave him any advice at all. And so Shinomiya says, it doesn't mean anything if he can't overcome it himself. And then he thinks to himself, besides, he's the guy who had the guts to pick a fight with me. A chef like him isn't going to fail a mere stagiaire skills test. So, showing that he actually kind of had faith in Soma the whole time, but was just, you know, being his usual self about it.
Being an asshole.
Well, no, Abel was being an asshole.
Yeah.
Shinomiya was just being, you know, he basically treated everyone equally, basically. Alright, so, Gakuhotse.
Yes, Nick. Yes!
Yeah. So we noted at a certain point that Gakuhotse, it may be ending soon, unfortunately. As much as we have liked it, it's not doing so hot in the polls right now. So this may be, like, the last case we get where we get to enjoy it and not have the looming cloud of, but it's going to be canceled now.
Yeah, like, here's the thing, guys. We did this whole routine when Cross-Managed was ending, and that got a while, but... The fact of the matter is that it is likely that this series is down to maybe its last 10 or even fewer chapters. At this point, I don't know if there's anything necessarily we can do, but if you want to at least support the series, if you do want to kind of show that you enjoy the series, I highly recommend, if you don't already, but if you have a Shonen Jump subscription, every week, make sure you go on to the survey, shonenjump.com/issue-survey, or not, yeah, hyphen, you put it in the polls there, put it in your top four, let them know that there's an interest in America for it. I feel like the series will still get a little bit of leeway based on the fact that it has Obata attached to it.
And because they gave it so much of a push, you know, at the start with the color pages and everything. So
I feel like it does have a little bit of something going for it that may help it out. But let your thoughts be known, guys. It does help to at least let it be known that there's a strong push for it somewhere, you know, in America. Maybe that'll help things out for it. Either way, you should always make sure you're voting in the issue poll, though, because that really does help kind of set a basis for things.
Hmm. All right, let's get into this, though. It's gonna be a bit of a lengthy one. Chapter 16, Evil Spirit 5 Meters Deep, Part 3. Start with a flashback from Pine's perspective. The day before the pool opening hijacking case classroom session. So she approaches Shiratori?
You got it.
Yeah, okay.
Sure, Tori.
And I think basically the girls in the class, I think is a nice way of putting it. I think that, what's her name? The defendant is there too, but I'm not sure. They're like, Pine says, what are you guys doing? We are folding 1,000 paper cranes together, praying for Inugami's victory. And they're like, why are you doing that? Well, because if he loses to Inugami, Raichi Papa might reconsider transferring you out. And Pine's just like, I don't know about that. And, Shiratori says, I like the continuity. She says, he's, helped me out and I've wanted to root for Inugami, but I couldn't because, that would mean, wanting you, my friend, to lose. It's like, oh, you're such a nice person.
It's an extremely nice sentiment of being like, I've always wanted to root for him, but I was never going to root against my friend.
This says, I can cheer him on now for the first time now because this is both for you and for, Satayan. So, hey, why don't you fold a few, help us out? And so Pine looks down at the piece of paper and he remembers the times that she remembers the times that Baku's teased her, and she just kind of thinks to herself, "I don't want to cheer him on." this is a great explanation, but it's kind of complicated, especially to describe it without pictures.
So follow along, everybody. We'll do a sound. It'll be like those old read-by-tape books. We'll make a sound when you turn the page. We'll be like...
So Tento wheels in this tank. And the judge's like, what is this? And Abaku says, this is an aquarium tank that was found at the bottom of the pool in question. I suspect the perp put the fish in here, then sunk this in the pool. I'd like to enter it as new evidence. And Raichi Papa says, objection! We were not given prior notice of this. And the judge's like... Well, yeah, but, shouldn't you have noticed the tank and stuff? And Abaku says, yes, but Tenmin Elementary's pool has a cordoned-off section. It was placed in the 5 meters deep area. And Raichi says, come on, don't you remember Matsuoka's testimony? That morning, the entire phys ed committee visually inspected that section and saw nothing. And Abaku admits, yes, you're correct. If the water is clear, you ought to be able to see even 5 meters down. That's why this tank's partially filled to reproduce those conditions. I'd like you to observe a magic trick. So he pulls out, how the fuck did he make this thing?
He's like, I just made this.
It's got a miniature-sized tank made out of plastic. Where do you get one of those things? You get it from, one of those, fast food kids meal toys from the 90s that just had a mini game that was with the water inside, and he had the one button plunger mechanism so he could shoot rings onto stuff.
It does kind of look like that.
So he says, all right, so I got this miniature sized tank. It's cute, isn't it? Whatever, just gives it one.
That'd be great if that's fucking Papa Raichu. He's like, get to the goddamn.
I do like that he's just muttering to himself. He's going, why do I have to watch a brat do magic?
His facial expressions and body language during this entire point is just great. Just him being like, what is going on?
Nothing happened. So Abaku is like, all right, so I'll drop this little tank inside the bigger tank. And Raichu's like, nothing happened. What is your point? And the judge goes, it's gone! And all of the kids are like, it's gone! It's gone! It's gone! And Raichi says, what are you talking about? I can still see it. And Abaku says, it's a matter of vantage point. You're looking down at it from pretty high up, Raichi Papa. Look, if I raise the figure tank up higher like this, and it just vanishes, it disappears before his eyes. And Abaku explains, it's based on light refraction. To begin with, we see an object because light reaches our eyes. However, light bends when passing through water or glass. And when the angle of refraction is wide enough, light gets completely reflected instead of bending at all. This is known as total reflection. That's what happened with His Honor and everyone in the gallery, which is why they stopped seeing the mini tank. And I love this explanation, because last chapter, Abaku noted, you don't understand things because you're looking down on us kids from high up and there are certain things you can't see. That's perfect! It's both literal and metaphorical, based on his height and his age. It's great.
Interesting. I actually didn't pick that up before.
So Raichi thinks to himself, like, oh, I guess I do remember, you know, the same trick being described in science textbooks and stuff when I was a kid. So Mbaku says, yes, I've reproduced the phenomenon here with this tank, but it also applies to it to a bigger vessel like the pool itself. So this tank would have been submerged within the deep set of the pool. And according to my calculations, there exists a blind spot 1 meter square at the center of the 5 meters deep area that isn't visible no matter where around the pool you stand. The perp set down this tank in that very spot. But Raichi says, well, come on, you don't have any proof the tank was actually there. But Ibaku says, actually, Inako's testimony has already verified it. If you're looking from inside the water, refraction doesn't occur and you can see the bottom as it is. So, when the kid dove down to the fence bottom and peered between the bars, he saw the face of a child staring up, which was actually his own face reflecting off the tank's surface, and he mistook that for a ghost.
What?
So Raichi realizes that that is why he had Ibaku have, or why Ibaku had Inako testify. So, very clever. But Raichi then says, ah, but this does not solve the bigger mystery. Let's say the perp did put the goldfish in this tank, then place it in the pool that morning. How the perp managed to make the fish appear right on time during fifth period for the sixth grade pool opening. And Baku says, by placing a lid on the tank so the fish wouldn't escape, of course. And Rachel, yeah, all right, in which case the only one who could have removed the lid is still the accused who entered the pool during lunch break. And Baku says, no, it was the fish themselves that opened the lid.
What? That's cray cray, Ibaku.
The clue lies in the court ordered necropsy conducted by the science club. You should have received a copy too, by the way. And Raichi says, well, they didn't find anything unusual, though. You know, the cause of death was chlorine poisoning, and the only residue found inside them showed that they'd just eaten. That's right. There were large amounts of food inside the goldfish that day, so much that when Matsuoka performed CPR, some popped out undigested from one's mouth. It's odd, isn't it? The fish died from chlorine toxicity, so it wasn't like someone had fed them while they were in the pool. Yep, the food was the lid itself! What had been stolen was non-dissolving pasted ball feed. The perp molded it into a flat sheet, used it to cover the tank's top, and sunk the whole thing in the pool. Tightly crammed in the tank together, the cold fish will be frantic to get out. They ate through the wall of food bit by bit and escaped out into the pool once they'd eaten it away entirely. By changing the thickness of the feed sheet, you can adjust how long it'll take the fish to break out, and I bet the perp calculated to a T beforehand.
Nick.
I would not have this much time and methodology and dedication if I was 12.
You'd have been like, fuck this girl and her swimming lessons. I don't care this much.
Your boobs aren't that great.
Yeah, I'd be like, this is a lot of work for a nice set of tits. I mean, I love tits, but this is a lot of math.
God. People in manga are just far too noble, basically. So Raichi's like, all right. But there's still one weak point to this, Raichi's just kind of reacting in shock. Ibaku says, but there's still one weak point to this nifty trick. Trapping goldfish inside a steel tank for too long would result in their death from oxygen deprivation. They wouldn't survive until fifth period from the day before. The earliest the perp could have placed the tank was that morning. And both Pine and Raichi realize at the same time, yes! The evil spirit 5 meters deep is you, Matsuoka!
Nick, how does it feel?
It's great. We were both right for very different reasons. You were right for the right reasons. I was right out of prejudice.
You were right out of hating the character's face.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
I hope this is like the point you start putting this on your resume. I figured out Matsuoka did it.
Before any clues arose.
Before the case started. They were like, hey, we're going to go to the pool. You're like, Matsuoka did it. They're like, no crime's been committed yet.
So everyone is in disbelief in the courtroom, except, of course, for Ibaku, who says the only one who could have committed this crime is the person who opened up the pool and found the intimidation letter. Matsuoka, you first stole the courtyard goldfish and food to prepare your plan. Then, that morning, you took the key and entered the pool area, covered the goldfish fill tank with the feed lid, and set it in the blind spot center of the 5 meters deep air gun. Right after that, you took the intimidation letter you'd also prepared to the faculty room, acting like you just found it. Even if your hair was wet, it could be easily explained since you're always sweating. Like a gross freak.
He didn't say that.
No one noticed the tank during the pool inspection, and swimming classes went on as scheduled. While the other grades used the pool, the fish steadily ate away at the food. They escaped perfectly out of time and suddenly appeared from the pool bottom as if by magic before your seemingly innocent eyes. Although his eyes don't look innocent to me! Look at that evil glare in that picture.
Him and that monkey are plotting things, Nick.
But the fish dying was a miscalculation. Those tears of yours that day didn't seem faked. I suspect Matsuoka had no idea that chlorine would kill the fish, because despite this amazingly ingenious plan, he's kind of a dumbass.
Like, despite the fact he was able to calculate how long the fish were going to take to eat through it and plan it so it perfectly came up during the class, he was like, he still hasn't grasped salt water and fresh water quite yet, and, you know, chemicals, they just, it didn't mesh with him. Oops.
The chlorine is there to kill stuff.
He took his chlorine lessons from Tento and didn't go, Tento drink chlorine all day! It helped keep him formed and active. It Tento's Wheaties.
Oh, God.
I just started thinking of him eating Wheaties and chlorine, like cereal.
He got the chance to appear on a box of Wheaties, but he passed it off so he could instead appear on a box of chlorines.
Of chlorine, like his mouth covered in it.
He's like giving the thumbs up and bubbles are rising out of his mouth.
His skin's turning purple from the poisoning and he's just like, drink it, Tento, say it good.
Chlorines, it's the breakfast of champions. Name Tento.
Tento's dad approves.
There's like a quote from Tento's dad. 100% approved, but only for Tento. Other kids don't eat this seriously.
My kids can't drink enough of this.
Oh, man. So, Raichi, of course, reacts by saying, so what are you talking about? Matsuoka more than excels at swimming. There is no reason for him to disrupt the pool opening, especially to this extent. Ibaka says, here is where it does become my conjecture. But my guess is that it was for Satoyan, right? Except for you are kids.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of got it last chapter.
So, Satoyan says, it's all my fault. And Matsuoka rushes towards her and says, no, you don't need to. And Satoyan says, I was so ashamed. I just wanted to be able to swim before... Let me get my southern down right. I just wanted to be able to swim before I graduated grade school. So this last month, I asked Matsuoka to give me secret lessons, see? So, Tento's like, so that rumor with them dating was actually... Yes, that's what you're saying. Shut up.
Tento not wise in the ways of love.
Tento thinks that the female mind is a mystery.
Tento take all of his logic from that movie where the guys could hear what women were thinking.
I don't even know what the fuck that is.
It was the inverse. All the women could hear what this one guy was thinking. No, it had to be that was a Dave Chappelle joke. It was that the guy could hear what women were thinking, and what was the name of that goddamn movie? What a man wants, I think, is that it?
What a guy wants, right?
What a guy wants.
I'm gonna make this Forces recap even longer.
IMDb. No. What women want. That was it. What women want. Mel Gibson. That's it.
Really?
Yeah, and he was a chauvinistic executive that gained the ability to hear what women were really thinking.
Jeez. Okay. So, Satoyan.
I thought it was someone a lot more smooth than Mel Gibson. I thought it was like really? Richard Greer or something. Like Mel Gibson, I was like, ooh, that's kind of creepy.
So Satan continues explaining, Matsuo could train me most every day, saying he wanted to support someone who was motivated. But I'm so slow. And there's this great picture of her practicing using a kickboard, and Matsuoka's got, like, fucking Super Saiyan aura surrounding him. You just gave up, didn't you? Sorry! Fucking love it. So everyone recalls when Higashida, you know, mentions that he thought he saw Satayan practicing her flurry kick, and Abaka says, yes, when he saw that, that she really was just doing that. Because unfortunately, she hasn't mastered swimming yet. And Satayan says, I think Matsuoka didn't want me to embarrass myself, which is why he wanted to delay the pool opening. And Abaka says, yes, and that's where Matsuoka made his second miscalculation. Satoyan hadn't given up. You probably panicked, having fabricated an intimidation letter, even crafting a timing device, making it all look like an evil spirit's doing. And then, Satoyan's unexpected independent training ends up causing her to be figured as the perp instead. So Matsuoka immediately apologizes, asking Satoyan to forgive him, bowing to her, and saying, I stoop to such cowardly measures, even though I swear to being hot-blooded, even though you yourself haven't given up at all! I am no longer qualified to teach you! And he bows to the entire rest of the class and says, I'm sorry to everyone else, too, for wrecking the pool opening. Please feel free to bully me from now on as punishment! And so everyone's like, well, you know, I mean, I wanted to swim, but, you know, whatever, we're not gonna bully you. And one guy's like, you owe me a candy bar. It's like, fuck you, kid.
Yeah, fuck you, asshole.
One guy's like, you mean you were dating? And creepy girl from the Higashide case is like, I've done my share too, remember? And the teacher's like, welcome to the First Offenders Club! Now my crime seems less extreme, because all the kids are just as bad as me!
She's like, you guys killed like 30 fish, I only killed one, and I didn't even succeed at that!
I didn't even kill it, I just forced a child to kill it. Wait, that makes me sound even more evil. Never mind!
Take that one back.
So, Raichi reacts in shock to this reaction that everyone has. And he's like, what is this glittering development? And he remembers all of the cases that he's been in where the people in the audience were like, oh, I demand the accused be sentenced to death! And he thinks to himself, is this a farce? No, it really is how they feel. They forgive each other sincerely. And even if they err, it's out of care for another. These children easily succeed at things that adults can't even do with effort. And in the courtroom, they say that Raichi Papa's heart grew 3 sizes. That's it.
He definitely has a very significant change of heart.
Yeah, really. He just goes immediately super gushy and understanding and stuff. It's actually very sweet. So he concedes to Attorney Lad and says, I got it in my head that someone who can't swim well is the perp, and thus never even thought of an underwater trick. Since to dive 5 meters down, towing a heavy tank is nigh impossible for a sinker like Satoyan. If I think about it, I'd already lost the ability to see the truth at that point. It appears there are some things you can't see if you're always looking down from above, just like you said. I genuinely apologize for belittling you kids. And Bug's like, yeah, whatever. Well, he brushes off because he got to sleep. Brings his attention to the fact that what you may or may not be seeing clearly could be more than just the children of others. And Pine takes the hint and says to her father, I'm sorry, but I don't want to change schools. I know that maturing as a prosecutor will lead to my happiness, but I feel that staying here would also... And Raichi Papa says, enough! Forgive me that I wish for your happiness is not a lie, but perhaps I've been imposing upon you what I consider your happiness to be. Just as one can't see what lies at the pool bottom without diving down there, I have no right to blindly choose where you belong. I've learned by being here today that you've come to like this class, haven't you? And Fine cries, well, almost cries, your lip quivers, and goes, yes! And she says, all right, do as you please then. And the judge says, I pronounce the accused innocent. We must give Matsuoka a heavy punishment. I hereby sentence you to keep giving Satoyan special lessons until she becomes able to swim. Matsuoka cries happily, and everyone's happy, and Fine is happy, but then she realizes that Baku's grinning creepily at her, and she's like, all right, I'm telling you right now, I don't like you still, because I'm the tsundere. Shut up. And Baka says, all right, well, if you want to stay here, then you can just keep letting me rack up wins. And Klein's like, get lost. And she throws something at his head, and it's a crane. And Pine thinks to herself, Puppygami, you idiot. You could have at least let me say thank you. So she did make a crane. So as Raichi is about to leave, the judge says, so what'd you think of the classroom session? And he says, I think that everything from the cast to the decision is saccharine sweet like shortcake. I hope I never have to go through one again. Farewell, school judgment. You've somehow made me just a bit jealous. Now, if this were like the last chapter of the series, I think this would be like perfect almost. It's just so like everyone is happy ending. And it makes me feel so good, honestly.
It is. It's just like, oh man, this is great. You know, like, it's. I mean, Obata's art is fantastic. That's you know, it's even a question. But and I'm blanking on the name of the author of this series. I'm trying to like skip back to the front to see who writes it. But his writing for this series has just been phenomenal. In terms of just like writing these actually like very compelling emotional moments, you know. We joke like, yeah, it's kind of weird, Raichi very quickly was just like, I'm being a shitty dad. But his speech is actually pretty, like, emotionally powerful, you know? Like, it strikes a good chord. The series is doing a good job at kind of keeping things, and in a very, like, I don't know the word. It's just very well-written, is the best, I guess, best way to put it. Very, very well-written and emotionally striking. Inoki sensei, that's it. I really enjoyed it. I thought this was a great chapter.
Prepare for more 30-minute long chapter recaps for Gakuhate just because we love him so much and we're going to milk it for all it's worth, basically. Yeah. So we're going to try and dwell on this and dote on it, basically.
Yeah, so... I really loved enjoyed it. Yep.
One Piece?
By Hero Academy, yeah.
Right! I always forget about that one. I don't know why. I mean, it's good. I just keep forgetting about it. I think it's just because I'm so used to going to Naruto, but Naruto's gone. So it's been gone for like half a year now. let's see. All right, My Hero Academia. Last time, of course, we had the build-up to Uraraka versus Bakugo. And we opened up right at the start of that, and Bakugo was saying, you're the floaty run, right? Round face? Well, okay. We're going to back down to it now, because crying uncle later won't cut it. Basically, Ida asks Midoriya, you thought of a counter strategy, you said, so what is it? Well, Kachan is strong, but he's got virtually no weaknesses in close range combat. His quirk's stronger the more mobile he is. He can maneuver in midair, but if she can get him floating, she'll gain the advantage. That's why backing down is not an option here. Or Rocker says that, never mind. Even just by accidentally touching him, she can send him floating, so he'll want to keep his distance. And if I know Kachan, he won't dodge, he'll confront her. So Rocker just charges in towards Bakugo, trying to catch him off guard and try to get a hand on her. He recalls that Bakugo usually tends to lead with a right hook, so she's like, all right, I'll just dodge this, and then I'll, you know, get in and I'll touch him. But the explosion that he sends out actually catches her off guard, because even though she knew it was coming, she couldn't react to it. But as basically smoke and dust and flame obscures her from view, she disappears, and then as Bakugo tries to attack what he thinks he sees, she comes in behind him, and it turns out that she actually threw her jacket and sent it floating so that it would serve as a distraction while she came from behind. Nice use of her abilities.
It's baffling to me. We had a battle series, where the female character removed an article of clothing.
It wasn't for fan service.
And it wasn't for fan service. It didn't make her sexier in the slightest.
No, because she's wearing a regular shirt underneath it, yeah, as opposed to super cleavage.
And she's been hit by explosions, and her clothes have remained on. After reading Fairy Tail, I can't understand how this is possible. Those explosions should have blown off all but her unmentionables, and then not done any more damage to her.
Hiro is looking over and is like, what's wrong with you? This is a perfect opportunity to show whatever part of her you want.
Yeah, he's like, to belittle your character with fan service instead of emotionally showing her growth. What are you doing?
So Bakugo continues to have the advantage because he just reacts to Uraraka's sneak attack and knocks her away again. So everyone's like, oh man, her quirk's not going to work if she can't touch him. It won't matter in the end because she's slower than him. But Uraraka is undeterred. She charges in again. But Bakugo basically cuts her off, just jumps in before she can reach him, knocks her away with another explosion. And Uraraka starts to get really intense, just yelling out like nothing. Just going, ah! Female character, guys. So she refuses to give up, and everyone's like, oh, come on. It doesn't matter how good she is at dodging, and she's just getting desperate. God, what's the point of this? I can't stop this. Shouldn't you guys, you know, be stopping the match? People are calling down from the stands to the judges, and then people start booing Bakugo. What a heel! Stop toying with the girl! Stop toying with that helpless female! And everyone's booing him. But then, one of the judges goes, you know, to be honest, I kind of agree, but another cuts him off, just nails him right in the head, and says, is the one who said he's toying with her a pro? How many years of active duty? If that's what you're taking away from this, then you can leave. There's no point in watching. Go home and start looking at job hunting sites. And everyone's like, Aizawa-sensei? And Aizawa says, she's come this far, and he knows her strength. His caution shows that he recognizes her as a worthy opponent. It's exactly because he wants to win so badly that there's no room for carelessness or holding back. And sure enough, Bakugo is thinking to himself as he stares down Uraraka, who is breathing heavily and wiping sweat from her face, just thinks to himself, not yet. She's not dead yet. And Uraraka says, all right, thanks, Bakugo. Thanks for not dropping your guard. And she claps her hands together. Some guy in the stand says, maybe he didn't notice because he's so close, but the pros in the stands, the ones who were booing, they should be ashamed for not noticing. By charging in low every time, she kept Bakugo's attacks and attention focused on the ground, all to set up her weapons. With the constant attacks and vision-obscuring smoke screens, he never realized. And there's a huge, massive degree floating in the air, positioned to strike Bakugo. And Uraraka shouts out, I'm gonna win! And sends them all crashing towards him. And everyone's like, oh my god, it's a meteor storm! And even Midoriya is surprised. Like, oh my god, it's such an extreme self-sacrificing strategy! And even as she sends the meteor storm crashing in, Uraraka is rushing forward herself. And she says, that should be enough. Whether he intercepts or dodges, I'll find my opening. In that instant, I'll close the gap. I'll win! I can win! I'll win just like Deku did! And Bakugo lifts his hand up in the air and just creates a huge explosion which blows all of the debris away and even knocks Uraraka on her ass away from him. And Bakugo just says to himself, you know, it must have been all that hanging out with Deku, huh? I knew you had some kind of plan. And Uraraka is just based in shock. There's some other word for it. I can't remember what it is, but... So everyone's like, oh my god, the secret plan just went up in smoke. And Bakugo says, oh, that was a close one. And Uraraka says, that was the best I could do, but it wasn't enough. And Bakugo starts to close in for the kill, and Uraraka says, but still, I can't give up. And she steps forward, and she just collapses in exhaustion, and her body won't get up anymore. And Deku realizes that she has passed her weight capacity. She can't use her powers on herself anymore. So... basically, you know, the judge checks on her and she's like, no, not yet, dad. And the judge determines she's unable to continue, so Bakugo moves on. So I love those kinds of confrontations where, you know, a character can look good in defeat. So this is really cool.
You got just as much out of her losing than Bakugo even possibly could have gained the victory, so. Really good, really good thing. And again, it's not often you're going to see the female character in a series usually get this kind of development. So, I mean, I applaud it for that. I also really enjoy the fact that he seems to, Bakugo does respect her. I thought the one line of him being like, she's not dead yet was kind of weird, but I guess that's just his very...
That's just his ruthless attitude.
Yeah, that's just his ruthless attitude. But I like that there's a small fact, at the start of this, he calls her round face. But by the end of it, he's like, oh, are you done yet, Uraka? Like, he actually is starting to refer to her by name, showing that he is respecting her ability. So I really, really appreciate that. I thought this was a very good fight. I hope the tournament has more of these. And we're getting Deku versus Todoroki, I guess, next, right?
Yes. Well, maybe not next, but they will be in the second round to get against each other. Also, I like how this shows growth for Bakugo as well, because he was an arrogant, overconfident bitch before, and now even, you know, round-faced girl Uraraka has his respect, and he is paying close attention to everything she does. So there you go. All right. One Piece. Right?
Yes, you got it, okay. Neck.
Chapter 781, Desire. Whew. Okay, so last time, things were looking kind of bad for the good guys. Law was seemingly dead. Luffy was staring down both Treble and Doflamingo. And Doflamingo had decided, I'm going to close the birdcage and, you know, just kill everyone inside it, basically. And as we pick up, the walls of the birdcage slowly close inward. And as they pass through buildings, they cut them to ribbons. Hey! So everyone starts retreating back to the center of the kingdom to try and get to safety. Meanwhile, back at the palace, Doflamingo says, well, just these two word bubbles, go ahead.
Actually, Nick, you're going to have to handle it. Apparently the chat can't hear me. They're having some kind of issue. I don't know what.
They can't hear you?
Yeah, apparently I'm quiet.
They can only hear me.
Apparently, I'm really quiet. I don't know what the issue with it is. I had no sound.
Oh, stupid freaking sound leveling!
Yeah, so I don't want to start doing the Joker voice. It's all, just right, like,
hey, all right. Yeah, he says, "All right, everyone will die sooner or later." Oh, pardon me, I didn't let you know that the terms of the game have changed. The movie's like, "What are you talking about? What game?" And Doflamingo says, "All right, listen. The birdcage surrounding the city is slowly but surely closing in, folding itself up like an umbrella." You're Joker, not Penguin. Come on, get yourself straight there, Doflamingo. "As it closes, it will eventually slice through everything in this country in, let's say, 1 hour. It's going to be a long fucking fight if they go for a fucking hour. So everyone continues to evacuate. Usopp is panicking, rather. And people are commenting on Doflamingo's actions as well. Some people don't understand what's going on. Usopp eventually just kind of shouts out from the plateau. He's like, "Come on, Luffy, go whoop Doflamingo!" And Kinemon joins in cheering for him. And Doflamingo says, "I will not spare a single soul. There is no benefit to me in saving the lives of those who know this country's secret. Not the towns, not the people, not the animals, not your friends, and certainly not you." So he says, like, that means to him. That just means that your friends have only died a bit before you did. So, yeah. And he says, "All right, and I'm just going to build another country after this." But, yeah. Anyway. Luffy charges in and tries to attack him, but as Doflamingo is cockily reacting to this, suddenly Law kicks into action. Turns out he wasn't dead. Amazing. He leaps up into action and uses his shambles, however you want to pronounce his ability, to, well, fucking stab Doflamingo with something he calls Gamma Knife. And it's apparently very, very, very painful. And Law explains that it will destroy your body from the inside.
I just got Ultron flashbacks now. I mean, I flashbacks for a movie that's not even fucking out yet. But he says that line, "I will destroy you from the inside." Do you think Ultron is Law, Nick?
No.
Aww. I wanted my two favorite things to cross over again.
Treble reacts in shock and says, "How can you do an op-op attack without room deployed?" And Law says, "We are within my room. It'll cut down on my life a bit, but I've had a room in action so large you can't actually see the border. All for this moment, this strike." And so we get a little bit of a flashback to how, as he was getting shot up, Law managed to pull a little bit of a body switcheroo with a corpse?
Dude.
A dude. Yeah. Somewhere. And so that one actually absorbed most of the bullet shots. So he is not dying. He's still missing an arm, but he's not dying, basically. And then he relayed the plan to Luffy to essentially act as a distraction so that he could hit him with this ultimate technique. As he describes it, there's no defense from within your body. Even you cannot withstand the effects of this attack. And Doflamingo's going, and he starts to fall to his knees, and Treble says, no! A king never falls to his knees! Doflamingo reaches out towards Law, and he's like, but it's no use, though. Even if you kill me, there's no saving you now. But even besides that, Luffy comes into action to kind of save Law, hits Doflamingo with his jet stamp, and knocks him on his ass, and sends him sprawling. And Luffy's like, all right, I'm going to get you now. But Law says, no, Straw Hat, he's mine. He's just like crawling towards him.
Yeah, he's just like,
he hates him so much.
I'm like, yeah, it might be more empowering if you were on your feet at the moment, Law.
Nothing against you. He will crawl on his one hand and knees in order to finish killing the guy. He hates him so much. Ugh. So yeah, but he manages to get towards Doflamingo, and he forms another smaller room, and he says, there's no saving you now. The gamma knife ruptures organs without any external wounds. Take my word for it. I'm a doctor. Such a cheesy, awesome line.
What's your doctorate in? Musical appreciation.
And then he falls
still,
over it.
Still a doctor.
Treble rushes forward, like, oh, what have you done, Law? And Luffy just kicks him and sends him fucking flying. And Luffy's just like, stay out of this! And then Law really fucking verbally tears into Doflamingo. Says, you brought together people you could use and called them a family. And when your own brother Korra tried to stop your madness, you killed him. Doflamingo says, yeah, it was such a shame that he betrayed me. Never thought he could turn a gun on me. Are you back yet?
We can.
Okay, cool.
Apparently they're saying they can, they can't. I don't know. Fuck them.
I'm sure the recording's fine.
Fuck them. Yeah. That's what I'm saying, Nick.
Law then says, but you knew that Korra could never be able to pull the trigger. But I could have.
I bet you could. You and me are birds of a feather.
In this one case, I'm fine with that. You were the one who should have died that day.
Shall I say what you're hoping to hear, Law? Corazon was an obstacle and an eyesore to me. In fact, I'm glad I killed him.
And Law just fucking... is it actually a shock?
Yeah, he's like, counter shock. Hurt! He's like, ow, that hurts!
And then Law collapses after striking what seems to be the final blow. Actually, a little bit of a fade to black in the last panel of this page. But then, next page, Doflamingo just stands up, and he's fine. And Trevor's like, that's our king! And
fine, I could perform emergency care on myself. You see, beneath the skin, my strings are rapidly reconstructing my organs.
What?
It's all in how you use your powers. It's not quite the same thing as healing, but... thanks for self-destructing anyway. Now I can stomp you out for good!
And Law reacts to this by shouting out, damn it!
Whoops!
But as Doflamingo tries to stomp down, just like curb stomp Law, basically, as he just goes into despair, kind of covers up his face and just keeps going, damn it, damn it. Luffy sticks his foot out and just blocks Doflamingo's foot. And they just stare at each other. And that's the end of the chapter.
Oh, Nick, I want to see Doflamingo versus Luffy so bad.
That's such a cool moment, too. Where he just, like, reaches his foot. I was like, no, you're not going to do that.
I'm still wondering what the fuck Treble's going to do in this. Or if he's just going to be like, I'm around, watching. But
that one kick that Luffy gave him, that's enough to keep him down.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, you've defeated me. One of the three most powerful members of the army. But, like, I say that.
Oh, my one weakness! Being hit!
Being kicked in the side! Ouchies! But, no, I'm sincerely super pumped to get Doflamingo versus Luffy. This is something that's I'm expecting big things out of.
I think this is going to be the one major fight in this arc that will take a little while at least. So, looking forward to it. Okay, Toriko?
Yes, Toriko.
Gourmet 318, bawl your eyes out! His exclamation point, so it's really intense.
He wants
everyone. Komatsu's alive! And everyone is crying. Yes, that is the first 4 pages of this chapter, I think. Yeah. And everyone's like, oh my god, I thought you were a goner. And Gourmet says, I did die once. And Toriko says, what do you mean? Something broke in place of my life. Wait, what are you talking about? What you talking about, Komatsu? This! Somebody put this in my bag, didn't they? Remember? The thing that somebody put in my bag?
I'm sure it happened. People who like Toriko better.
Get you? Yeah. And Toriko's like, that is the good luck charm that Mappy gave me when I left Union in charge of you at the foot of 100G Mountain. I hit it with him when we left Area 8. Even I don't know what's inside. Well, now it's broken, so no one ever knows. No. I was like, well, whatever it was, it saved me. It's like, well, okay. Something broke in the place. That's so weird.
I'm sure this has got to be one of those things that if I cared more about Toriko, especially in the past few years, I probably would be like, oh yeah, remember that charm Mappy gave him?
But there's...
Of course, it broke and saved Komatsu's life.
But that would have been after he had his like heart ripped out, though. So,
well, I think he was dying at that point, but not dead. So it broke when he officially died, gave him another chance at life, but he was still dying. So that's why Toriko had to get the heart and pull it back into him.
Maybe it was one of those things where it's like he was meant to die, so something had to be taken in exchange. I don't know, man.
All we know is that fucking Coco's fortune-telling powers suck ass.
But his electromagnetic waves did completely vanish!
Fuck you, Coco. I hate you so much.
Technically, I was right.
Technically, Coco always right. Man, fuck you, Coco.
He's just Tento now.
Coco, no, all along, he's just douchey, condescending.
Coco, tell fucking... future, except when Coco can't.
Coco sometimes forget tell future.
So Toriko's like, oh, so when you were saying goodbye to me, you really meant it then? And he's, and Kumatsu's like, what? He's like, really? He just goes, huh?
And it's like the idea, sorry, I'm about to move back to our joke, but just the idea of him being like, Coco sometimes tell past thinking it's future. Watch out, JFK!
No, Russell Wilson, don't throw that ball!
Miss Diana, don't get in Carl!
You go through two terrible, tragic celebrity deaths, and then when I come up with a Super Bowl reference. Oh, God.
I don't know why, but that made me laugh very hard.
No, Night Shyamalan, don't make Last Airbender!
Alright,
whew,
let's go.
Anyway, so Toriko's like, oh, wait, you mean you don't remember telling me that? And Komatsu's like, well, my memories from while I was in that coma are sort of hazy, but even while I was completely unconscious, I remember you took my hand and squeezed it tightly, Toriko, and you told me we'd always be together and asked me to... It's too easy! Sorry!
Then you blew me.
You took my hand and you put it on... but they're super crying everywhere. I'll never forget you wrapping your hand around mine. It's traumatizing. And you too, Toriko, Sunny, and Coco, and even Zebra, you're all sobbing your eyes out. And Zebra's like, you and you, we're not crying. You're crying buckets! I never knew you could look like that, Zebra. And Zebra's like, it's because of the flower pollen. And the Zendora goes, shut up. I'm super macho. I never cry.
I just scream at things.
So it's like, yeah, see, you know, the pollen bond causes endless snot and tears to come out. And so Komatsu looks at them and he's like, you know, you can eat them and the symptoms might stop. And everyone's like,
Zah?
And so immediately,
it's like next
just like a bunch of half-eaten Sundoricos looking nonplussed by the situation.
Very much like, oh, things really turned on us.
They're like, wow, this is actually really great. it's just delicious, and we're totally fine. And so Komatsu's like, oh, you know, while I was asleep, I heard lots of food's voices. I don't know if any of that was really the voices of a food, but I might have heard Pear's voice. Everyone looks at Pear. And so Toriko's like, ah, Sundoric Apollon has a 100% fatality rate. The reason why we were able to retain our bodily fluids, despite our exposure to the pollen, must have been thanks to Pear. Even though we didn't directly drink it, it still nourished us through its sound and smell and touch. And
the, whatever the sixth most erotic sense is. Penis touch.
Sight. Well, it can't be taste because we... So I guess it's a tasty-looking ball, so that kept us going, yeah. So Gwant's like, yeah, the good luck charm broke my place in place of me dying, and my recovery was after that was thanks to Pear. Without Pear, we would have been killed by the Monkey King, or killed by Sundoric Apollon. And everyone's just like, yes, we're always being saved by ingredients and food. Well, Zebra goes, om nom nom.
Zebra's like, whatever.
Fucking love Zebra.
This fucking piranha plant's delicious.
Why doesn't Mario just eat these things? It would make going through the game so much easier.
You wouldn't have to worry about when they popped out. You'd just be like, oh, dinner time.
Om nom nom. Then at that moment, the sappiness is interrupted by earthquakes after everyone goes, wait a minute, where is the Monkey King? Oh my god, 100G Mountain is done for, it's breaking apart. And then they're like, Yun, take Komatsu back inside you and save him. And Yun's like, I'm still really sore from having all of you inside me at once, so give me a minute. Asshole tops. So then Toriko is like, oh wow, it really did collapse. Hey look, a shack. Yep, there's a house there. It's a good thing it didn't get crushed by the mountain. And then everyone looks inside the house. And it's like, oh my god, it's the Monkey King! And Coco is like, oh, it's a tomb!
Coco's like, he poops gold! And they're like, no, those are just blocks. Komatsu. Aww.
Coco says, it's a tomb! Probably a home the Monkey King shared with his lover long ago. And I can see a coffin in there! His lover laid to rest in that coffin. A building! Built atop a mysterious plot of land that possesses powerful gravity and a coffin.
Coffin, coffin, coffin.
So they're like, oh, you mean that the house is at the center of this mountain's powerful gravitational pull? He must have put her coffin here so that his lover wouldn't have to worry about having enough to eat in the afterlife. He's been accumulating ingredients for so long that they became 100G Mountain. Okay. So those weren't rocks? All right.
They're like, no, those were potatoes.
Really hard potatoes. So they're like, oh my god, so the mountain's just a gravesite. Yes, and it seems we were wrong about the monkey dance. We danced it just fine.
At the end of the grave, he's like, well, Zebra was a little off, but the rest of us were great.
The rest of us were perfectly fine. Zebra, you need to work on your form. Tighten up your ankles, man. At the end of the dance, the Monkey King wasn't trying to eat us. He was trying to kiss us. And there's a little picture of the monkeys kissing. Which makes sense when you think about it, because he tried to eat them, and Toriko responded by biting his tongue, which is basically a super safe word triggering kiss. So, yeah.
Alright, so I kind of like this twist. I don't know if it's a twist. There's actually been people. I have a One Piece role playing forum that I set up, and on it we have forums dedicated to people just talking about different series. And on our topic about Toriko, quite a few people guessed that the final step in the puzzle was going to be them kissing. So I had kind of seen this by proxy a couple times, but seeing it in the actual magazine, I was like, oh no, that is, you know, that's clever. I didn't actually figure it as it was happening, you know, now that they say it, yeah, that was kind of a kiss, and it does make the Monkey King look less like a douche, when he's just like, you messed up that move, I'm going to eat you now.
He's like, come on, give me a kiss!
Yeah, make out with me, please!
I haven't gotten any in a millennium, man.
You've been pining after this kid's balls for like a week now, you gotta tell me you're not into this.
Look, if you want what's down here, you have to do first base first.
Yeah, I need some foreplay. That's how Monkey King works.
Not on the first date, you know? No, stop trying to pull my balls out. Stop it!
Oh, mean! But no, I like that twist. I like, you know, what we got here. This is all very silly, but that's...
It is, but it's Toriko.
Yeah, that's when Toriko's at its best, is when it's being silly, but not being just stupid, if it makes sense. I actually think that this arc really redeemed itself by the end. This may not be necessarily the end of it, but I sincerely like the way everything's wrapped up here.
By the time, I think around the time that Kaka revealed her true intentions, and they started the dance and stuff, that was really, really started to turn around.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the end of it, yeah, it all came together. So, yeah, liked it.
Yeah. Okay. We're all Trigger.
Chapter 97, Nasu Squad, Part 2. Everyone still reacting in shock to the fact that Chika blew the hell up out of that bridge. So, meanwhile, of course, you know, Kumagai is reacting to the fact that she's, you know, on her... Basically, all the attackers are alone on one side, right? There's, like, one more person over there, I think.
Which side?
The side with Kumagai and Murakami and Yuma. There's one more over there.
It's the sniper for Nasu Squad's also over there.
Okay, right. So, Taichi, with his stupid hat, is like, oh, man, we're separated from Ko. This reminds me of the invasion. And... Murakami is just like, just hang on a sec. Once this is done, I'll swim over to you if I have to. That's a good line. So, Kumagai and Murakami start fighting with their sword thingies. And the announcer chicks...
Sword thingies?
Yes, they're now sword thingies.
I was like, but they're just swords.
No, they're sword thingies because there are special names for them.
Oh, Kogetsus.
And, like, Scorpion and all those.
How do I remember shit from this series, Nick? I feel like this is...
I don't know. You remember this, and you remember One Piece, and...
Do you know Doflamingo's, like, 11 feet tall?
Really?
Yeah. It's crazy. The Shikibuka, like, I think, Kuma... I think Kuma's, like, 20 feet tall. It's ridiculous, Nick. The scale for size in that series is out of control.
It is weird, yeah. So, Announcer Chick is, like... With the bridge gone, it's hard for the squads to meet up. This is probably the worst-case scenario for Nasu Squad. And Jin says, well, they aren't the only ones. All three squads will have to change their plans. And unlike last time in the Tamakoma 2, Suwa, and Arafune battle, where the strategy defined the outcome, this is a test of the team's intrinsic abilities and whether or not they can recover from an unexpected development. And we get just a few bits of Murakami and Kumagai exchanging blows. It definitely looks like Murakami is holding the advantage, although neither is really landing a blow on the other. Kumagai manages to dodge an attack in midair, and then as Murakami comes in towards her, suddenly Yuma tries to attack from behind, and Kumagai is like, is he trying to throw Murakami into the river? But Murakami manages to react in time, dodge away, and get some distance, and Yuma just thinks to himself, I should have known that wouldn't work. So, I love Yuma's attitude sometimes. He's like, okay. What's her face?
Akane.
Yes. Stupid sniper hat chick.
Her hat is not stupid, Nick. Her hat is adorable.
Both of those hats are stupid.
If I was a 15-year-old or 16-year-old girl, I'd probably wear that hat. Hell, I'm a fucking 26-year-old man not thinking about wearing that hat.
Admittedly, it is not nearly as stupid as Taichi said.
I think that hat is stylish.
No, it's not.
I think the problem you're having, Nick, is the outfit that she's currently wearing makes it look kind of garish.
But I don't care about their outfits.
In a vacuum, Nick, that hat, it's très magnificent. Like how I started it in French and then said fucking, just did it in regular old English.
Très magnificent. It was mucho awesome.
It was mucho coolio.
Anyway, so she basically says, like, all right, Kumagai, I'm in a sniping position, so who do you want me to you know, take out, Yuma or Murakami? And Kumagai just says, whichever one point is easier to take. Meanwhile, Jesus, Osamu, what are you doing? Nasu's apparently really fucking good, basically.
I like to think, you know, Samu's mind right now is, like, just fucking Jackie Chan from Jackie Chan, and she's just like, bate, bate, bate!
I don't want any trouble! So Nash's specialty is the Viper, and so someone's like, okay, well, I thought I was prepared for this, but apparently I wasn't, and it's chasing him around corners and stuff, and he's barely managing to use the Ragus to block attacks and so on and so forth, and as he's just thinking to herself, man, this escape route's so simple, because he's not used to combat yet. Meanwhile, Tai Chi tries to take a shot at Nasu and misses completely. So he thinks to himself, I wonder if lightning would be better to use. And so the operator says, hey, don't shoot blindly at her. He's like, it's fine, she can't see me in this rain, I think. And so Sayo, the operator for Nasu's squad, is just like, okay, here's the image map for where he shot from. That's where he is. Go for it. And Nasu just sends a whole fucking bunch of bullets after him.
He's just like, how is this possible?
No, my perfect plan!
I want his fucking operator to just be like, are you fucking stupid? How do you not understand that we're a part of your team? Like, that she couldn't just be like, hey, just, you know, fucking with 3D mapping, you're right there.
So he has to jump off of the edge of the building that he was on. The bullets still follow after. It looks like he's going to get caught. But, fortunately, blonde guy on Murakami's team is right where he's going to land and just summons a shield and helps him out. And says, oh, you saved me! Nasu's scary!
I fucking hope Tachi dies first. Fucking I hope it's, like, the one time, like, a fucking Trion body fails. It's just like, oh, you've killed my real body!
The most, like, grating part is that I know that there's, like, a whole bunch of people that we know through podcasts or that listen to the podcast who are like, he's so cute! Primarily of the female persuasion. It's just like, no, he's not. Stupid fucking kid with a stupid hat.
It's like the one person who's like, I fucking hate this kid. I wish you had been taken by the neighbors!
Oh, God. I wish you were getting transferred instead of a guy. So, announcer chick is like, see, Captain Nasu's Viper has free reign over the East Bank. Carelessness will be harshly punished. And, I forget his name. Shit. Jin's rival guy.
Tachikawa.
Yes, I almost said Midori Kawa, but I knew that wasn't right. So he's like, Tamakoma's defeated, Suzunari will go soon after. So Tai Chi wasn't totally wrong to fire, but Nasu's just better. You can program Viper trajectory in your mind before you shoot, but usually you pre-program several useful trajectories and use as needed. Nasu's different. She makes them up every single time. And, let's see.
What is he says Mayuzumi and Nasu are the only Viper used to program trajectories in real time. I'm assuming Izumi is one of his squad mates.
Yeah.
I don't remember who that is, though, off of first.
I don't remember his squad at all. So. Yeah. But yeah, he's just like, yeah, they're the only ones who can program trajectories in real time. So, yeah, again, badass.
Very cool, yeah. I mean, that's sort of a pretty big deal.
Yeah. Osamu contacts Chika and says, all right, Nasu's bullet will target you faster than you think, so don't shoot unless you're sure you'll hit her. And Chika is just chilling out in some stairs somewhere, just sitting down like, okay, you be careful too. Bye. Smiley face. Tongue sticking out emoji send.
Winky face.
Although I'm pretty sure that she wouldn't do any of those. It would just be like colon greater than sign.
Yeah, V.
So, where was it? Jin is also analyzing the match. It's like, yeah, they're pretty evenly matched. They're kind of in a deadlock right now, but that means that when one of them finally falls, things will move fast. And Tachikawa says, but Nasu Squad has the advantage. Tamakoma and Suzunari's aces are duking out on the West Bank. Long-distance sniping is difficult in this weather. The East Bank will be a competition of skills between the shooters and gunners. So unless Tamakoma and Suzunari work together, they won't be able to defeat Nasu. And Jin just goes, well, we'll see.
Dun, 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 dun. He knows something, Nick.
It's a good thing Jin's so cool, because otherwise you'd be so...
Oh, I told you the moment we met him, I was like, this guy is going to either annoy the piss out of me, but somehow he's managed to just not annoy the fuck out of me by being like, I kind of know everything that's going to happen based on my power. I'm like, God, you are like some fucking anomaly. Like, every I feel like I have every reason to hate you, but I, somehow you're just fucking cool enough that I'm like, oh, I love this dude.
So then we get a bit of some introspection from Osamu after he seemingly managed to get away from Nasu for a little while. He just thinks to himself, I forgot to take bad weather into consideration. Taking out the bridge was a last resort. Now we can't use the strategy we came up with beforehand. But this kind of thing will keep happening, so this is where it all matters. And then he fucking takes charge. He says, here are your orders. Listen closely, you two. Chika, give me Suzunari 1's position, especially their sniper. Stay away from the enemy and prioritize not getting caught. But you can fire when necessary. It's up to you and Usami's judgment. Try to keep out of Nasu's range. Kuga, don't even think about us. Focus on your battle. Defeat Murakami this time. And he was like, all right. And you? I'll get the points on this side. Holy crap. Confident to Osamu, man.
I mentioned this on Twitter. At this point, Osamu's like my spirit animal. If good things happen to this guy, I feel like good things will happen in my day too, Nick. Because if Osamu, if this fucking Nundi can get his shit together, well, I mean, I gotta get mine.
Meanwhile, back in Tamakoma headquarters, Tamakoma 1, it seems, is watching the battle unfold on TV. And Konami.
Guys. Yes.
She says, man, are you sure taking out the bridge was a good idea? And
Kyosuke.
Damn it. I almost went for Karasuma. It's the other guy. Kyosuke says, well, Nasu would have destroyed anyway. They only gave Nasu a slight advantage instead of a substantial one. It wasn't a bad decision. Konami's like, well, they can't win without Yuma anyway. And then not Maze Hughes says, ah, well, what do you think, Husei? And fucking Lord Husei is chilling on the couch in a hoodie next to annoying pilot helmet kid and his capybara. It is the weirdest. I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would see this visual. The three of them all lined up next to each other.
Just like, oh, hello, Lord Husei. What's that fucking capybara doing sleeping next to you? Like, it's cool.
I like the capybara. Shut up. And Husei just says, there is nothing to say about such a primitive battle. The weak will lose. That's all there is to it. So, very weird, interesting development. The prisoner of war is just like, hey, you want this hoodie? Hey, you want to watch this battle with us? Come on.
You can hang out with our capybara.
And it hasn't been, like, extremely long since that battle, too. It's been, like, what? Like, a couple of months?
Yeah, not that all that long. A couple months of training, so yeah.
So it's interesting. It's like, yeah, you know, we just, like, let them wear this hoodie and hang out here.
And yeah, I mean, they said, they did say that they, you know, when they took him in, I think Tamakoma was going to take him, so.
Yeah, well, it's just interesting. It's interesting to, like, he just, like, hangs out with them in the common room and stuff. So apparently they trust him enough to not cause shit. So.
Yeah. Or he's just like, fuck the neighbors, man. Those guys left me behind. They're assholes. I will admit, though, it took me, like, 2 reads. Like, on the second read, I was like, ah, now I remember who this character is. I had to stop. I was like, is this some fucking random-ass member of a squad that was introduced at one
point? Yeah, I kind of was the same way of looking at that page, because I was like, who the hell is this guy?
I was like, I know, I've heard Husei. The name Husei.
Wait, Lord Husei? What's he doing wearing a hoodie?
I was like, is it that fucking kid who also has a black trigger? Why is he that? No, that's not it. Fuck. Yeah, I don't know. And the second time I was like, oh yeah. Huh. Very interesting. I'm excited for next week, Nick. Fucking Osamu is going to have to go toe-to-toe with Nasu, and I really want to see how that's going to go. Mm. I'm like, does he have a plan? Because this entire battle seems to be one about showing off their individual strength, showing that in the case where all the pain in the world means nothing and they're forced to react solely on a, you know, a reactionary basis, you know, can they stand the test? And that's what's going to determine whether or not they make A rank. So this is a chance for Osamu and Chika to show that they're not going to be two weights that are going to be dragging down Yuma, that they can stand on their own. So I really want to see, how does Osamu go up against this? Does he have a plan, or is he really just going into this with the grit and heart and hoping that's all he needs? Because, you know, he's got a tough test ahead of him. So I'm very excited.
Yeah. Liked it. So yeah, like you mentioned earlier on, pretty damn good week for Shonen Jump this this week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bleach was crap as usual. But aside from that, I mean,
everything else was really great good.
Great all around, yeah.
I think I had World Trigger at the top, then I did Gakkyo Hotei, One Piece, and then I think I did My Hero Academia. But again, it was it was tough to pick between them.
It was amazing when, like, such a good chapter of Food Wars, and yeah, like you said, did not even make the top four. Just all around good week. Maybe next week will be the same. Fingers crossed. I hope so. It'd be awesome. So,
and we're going to have 2 weeks in a row where we're getting both One Piece and World Trigger, so I don't even know what to do.
Oh, and we're going to have Black Clover to talk about, too. Oof. Okay. I think that is going to do it. Think so. Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. You can check us out every week here on twitch.tv/RoloT. We record the podcast usually Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although sometimes we do need to change up the schedule. So to stay updated, follow us on Twitter. He's at RoloT, I'm at YRulerOfTime, and we'll send out a tweet when we're about to start recording. Also, check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com and also iTunes. Subscribe to us on there. Leave a comment or rating. Help us beat those woodworking assholes.
I'm opening it right now to see if we got any new reviews, Nick. Do you want to give me the appropriate drum solo? And for our new reviews this week, we have... Hold on, wait. I had to go most recent. One from Lavin... Oh, God. I'm sorry. Lavin Thuthus. So, thank you.
Yeah.
Lavin Thuthus.
Yes. All right. Also, send us criticism, questions, and suggestions either in the comments section or email them to us. weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com is the address. Special thanks go out to Steve Man, our Tarkaris, NewRockFanboy.DeviantArt.com, iDrawBoobs.Tumblr.com, Patreon.com/SteveMan, as well as Felix Dark 2 and the Infamous Planet, whom Felix is filling in for the time being with visual editions of the podcast. Check out both of their works. Next time, well, maybe not next time, but the next series we're going to be covering is one that has actually been suggested numerous times over the course of about the past year or so. It is a series called Spirit Circle. Let me just read this description here. Futa Okeya is a normal 14-year-old boy, except for the fact that he has the ability to see ghosts. A cute girl transfers into his class one day, but acts particularly aggressive towards him. The girl, called Koko Ishigami, is followed around by a ghost called East. Futa tries to get along with her, but ends up failing after she sees the birthmark he usually keeps covered. She then declares him as her enemy, his birthmark is a cursed brand, and claims that they have a long history while talking about reincarnation. Who is this girl, and how are they connected?
What's the series called?
Spirit Circle.
Huh.
It's a monthly series that's been going for a few years, so there's about 30 chapters or so. So, I've heard almost universally good things about this, and people have kind of made the comment of whatever you think the series is about, it's actually better than that. So, should be interesting. So yeah, we'll see how that turns out. In the meantime, I don't know. How are we going to close this one off?
I don't know, Nick. We could have a follow-up discussion of Appleseed if you'd like. Do you remember that time that things happened?
I do remember the time that things
happened. And I believe there were explosions.
There were probably explosions. There was at the very least robot suits involved.
Man, robots are fucking awesome, aren't they, Nick?
Yes. Yes, they are, Chris.